and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this season, I'm bringing you all the news and interviews about what's happening in basketball throughout WA. And it's a super duper positive time at basketball in WA at the moment after a superb weekend for the Perth Wildcats and the Perth Lynx. The Wildcats beat Sydney Kings 114 to 105, and Bryce Cotton pumped out 41 points on a wild night at RAC Arena. And I'm thrilled to say Bryce will be one of my guests today. And then the Lynx smashed the Melbourne Boomers by 17 points in Victoria. And guard Alex Cibatoni will be joining me to talk about how she's handling combining playing with being a new mum. But first, the Wildcats are on a roll with 6 wins in a row. And one of the key reasons for that success has been this man.
Bryce is going to eat up all his shots all night on that one-on-one.
Oh, it's been a wicked tempo. And speaking of wicked, how about Bryce Cotton turning it on? 24 now for the maestro. Inside the last 60 seconds, here's Bryce Cotton knocking down the three. Cotton's up to 39. Kings have had enough.
Yes, the Kings had well and truly had enough. Bryce Cotton, welcome back to the Dribble Podcast.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, going well. Always fun to chat, especially after a 41-point game, but that might not have been the best part of your weekend. Did you end up going to the 50 Cent concert?
I actually did. So I ticked it off the list. I've now attended a concert in my life.
That was cool post-game. It was a weird finish to the night, wasn't it? Uncle Murda and Tony Yayo, who were supporting 50 Cent, were courtside. I'm pretty sure everyone who got a photo with them thought they were actually 50 Cent at the time. And I'm pretty sure the manager who approached you in the tunnel after the game, like he was a long-lost friend, was all excited by it all as well. Does that happen all the time to you, that just random people come up to you and act like they know who you are? Because he certainly looked like he thought he knew who you were, and you had no idea who he was.
It happens more so if I'm out in the public, but very rarely am I out enough to give, I guess, people a chance to come up to me. But the few times I do, it will happen on occasion.
That was a good result for you, wasn't it? To have the bloke who wants to just chat basketball, then invites you to the 50 Cent concert, and suddenly life's going good.
Yeah, exactly. We had some pretty good seats, and yeah, I enjoyed myself for sure.
True. So the game itself, 41 points. You said after the game that you're annoyed by a non-foul call, and that was all that you needed to fire up and get the motivation. And it instantly took me back to The Last Dance and Michael Jordan talking about making up rivalries in his head to stay inspired. Like, how long have you been doing this sort of thing to keep yourself motivated and stay inspired?
I wouldn't say it's a conscious thing. Like, it's just something I've kind of naturally done always. You know, it just might be just the little thing that sets me off, whether it's trash talk, whether it's what I think is a missed foul call or something else. But I always look for, or I guess I always naturally just find another log to throw into the fire, especially when it's in the heat of play already.
So are there any examples you can take us to that people might recall and go, oh, in this game specifically, this something happened which I just turned into something?
No, I can't give away my secrets because then people will start to know what my mannerisms mean. But I will say my aunt specifically back home, Aunt Kim, she'll always say I get a certain look in my eyes, and she refers to this high school game I had when we played Santa Rita. It was a rival high school, and she said I had a look in my eyes that she'd never seen before. And sometimes when those moments happen where I get a little ticked off, she might message me and say, oh, like, oh, you had that look in your eyes tonight or something like that. So that's a clue.
There's a clue for all Wildcats fans. It's important to have something like that going where you're able to flick a switch or to be able to focus on something different so that you can lift yourself, because it wouldn't be easy to play at the level that you play at consistently.
I mean, I think it just depends on the player. For me, obviously it works a lot, but I think that's just because that's a part of my personality. But for other people, maybe they need to be, you know, super happy, cool, calm, and collected all game to be at their best. So I wouldn't say it's a one size fits all, but it definitely suits me.
Let's use one example, which I reckon I'm going to say this was an example where it happened, and I reckon you'll be able to confirm it. When you sledged Corey Homicide Williams when he was sitting courtside, I reckon you looked at him that night back in 2018, 2019 sort of thing, and he was enough, given he'd been bagging the team all season, for you to fire up. Would that be a moment where you've looked back and gone, yeah, that was one?
Oh, yeah. That was And that wasn't a one-off incident. That was a bunch of pent-up comments he had made. And that was like, I guess, the tip of the iceberg when I finally saw him in Adelaide, or when we played Adelaide. So that was a huge build-up. And yeah, that I knew that was coming. It was just a matter of time of delivering it at the right time.
I got the feeling in that 2018-19 Grand Final series when people were talking up Casper Ware that you took it a little bit personally as well and decided, well, I'm just going to do what I do for the rest of the Grand Final series where you beat Melbourne. And then the next year, every time you played against Sydney when he was there, that you rose to a new occasion with that as well. Do you listen to the outside noise and did that motivate you also, like something like that?
No, so my fire was burning so much already just from how I had processed the 18-19 season as well as going into the next season. I had a fire burning that was, yeah, it didn't even matter what anybody else said, whether it was good or bad. I was, I was definitely in my own world. That's for sure.
What was that fire burning from specifically? Can you take us inside that burning fire?
No, I can't. I can't give away my secrets, but It was a few different things. Obviously, you know, I take the game very personally. It means a lot to me. So I just have a ultimate respect and love for the game. And I guess that's where my competitive juices come out, because off the floor, my personality is one way. And then on the floor, I'm a completely different person. But it's just due to how much I really love playing this game and, you know, just grateful for what it's done for my life. So I don't take it for granted, or any of the challenges that come my way, or challenges that I might, embrace myself.
Because you are a naturally reserved person, aren't you? But once you get on court, the extrovert in you does come out. How different are you, and do you feel a difference once you step onto court compared to just in your normal everyday life?
I wouldn't say I feel different. It's just I know that that's my time to completely be myself, show all my emotions and things of that sort. So it's something I look forward to each week, just knowing I get to be me unapologetically on the floor and don't have to hold anything back, because it's a lot of work that I put into this game. So obviously games are the perfect time to express that, and especially at home, I think our fans feed off of it, and so it's great. It's a two-way street.
Fans certainly had fun watching you the other night, and it was great to see that what you've been able to do in the past few games has been quite remarkable, getting back to how good you are compared to the start of the year when even you said you were annoyed at how you were performing. Like, I find it really interesting that I thought you were being held a lot, almost tackled like a footy player at different points this season, and you're clearly working out ways now to avoid being held, or either it's by moving more or the refs are finally figuring things out. Has there been a key moment that's allowed you to break free of those sorts of tackles or for the refs to notice you're being grabbed?
I don't know. I can't speak on the refs, but I think for me, the biggest thing for me is just focusing on what I can control. And, you know, obviously the game, it's, you know, there's going to be mistakes made. You know, no ref is going to make all the right calls, just like they won't always make bad ones. So learning that I have to take my emotions out of, I guess, sometimes when I feel I'm fouled, and just almost pretend as if I'm not going to get a call. So that way, if I do, it's just a bonus. But playing not to expect a call, I think, has helped me a lot, just because it shifted my focus to stay back in the game.
So you were really clearly struggling with your emotions on the court earlier this year. I haven't seen you argue with refs like you had in a couple of games where, as I said, the tackling was quite ridiculous to see. Did you find that challenging from an emotional point of view this year compared to previous years?
No, not necessarily. I think it was just I didn't feel like there was consistency, or some of the explanations I would get for why fouls weren't being called weren't adding up to me. But again, I had to remind myself, the way I've always thought, a ref isn't going to change their mind, or if the play has already happened, there's nothing you can do about it. And by me continuing to complain and talk, which is outside of my character anyway, I'm taking away from the game, and I'm taking away from me being able to be at my best play. So now I try not to even say a word to them, or if I do, I'll just ask one question and try to be done with it.
So 1 month ago, you were ranked equal 23rd in the league for total free throws taken. Right now, you're ranked number one, and you've been really challenging the refs to make the calls, challenging your opponent not to foul. It looks like you've been a lot more aggressive and doing your absolute best to make sure that you can get to the line as much as possible.
I mean, yeah, just trying to stay assertive and be aggressive as I can. And I think also one thing that helps is just knowing that I'm feeling like I'm back in rhythm. So just that comfort level. And I think that definitely helps, because now it's just, yeah, the instincts are through the roof now. Sometimes I might not consciously do a great move or a smart move where I'm trying to draw a foul or get to the basket. It just kind of flows. And that's the type of space I like to be in, where I'm so confident, so comfortable. I'm just playing off instincts instead of trying to think my way through, because that's when the mistakes start to happen.
We can see now that this group's really gelling with six wins in a row and the ability to understand each other. Do you feel like you've now reached the point of the season where you understand each other a lot more than at any other point of the year, given it's such a new group?
By comparison, yes, this is the most we understand each other throughout the year this far. But obviously, there's still more season to go. And as long as we're still playing games, we want to try to continue to keep getting better. But we definitely like the way we're building at this point, for sure.
Do you feel that there was a long amount of time where John really was saying you were practicing really well and it wasn't coming out onto the court? You've had not as many games in recent weeks. So you've been a lot more practice as well. Has that helped to change the energy that wasn't working earlier on the year, just having more and more practice to be able to work on this?
No, I think the biggest thing is, you know, getting a couple of wins was the biggest thing, because you can practice as good as you want, in my opinion, but if it's not happening in the games, you're not getting wins, it can only do so much for your mental. So once we started to see that carry over and we got a couple games under our belt, then that gave us the motivation to make sure we continue to have great, now that we're starting to see it translate to the game. And it's just a matter at this point of not getting a big head, staying even keel, and just trying to continue to build, because this is no time at all to be complacent.
You said a couple of weeks back that everyone got together, had the chat, the circle meeting sort of thing that most teams do when dramas are happening. This is an emotional group. Was that important for everyone just to be able to express their emotions and work out how to harness it a bit better?
I mean, yeah, it was definitely important, just because, you know, nothing was really going right for us. And I felt like at that point, most of the individuals on our team, we were all kind of playing below what we know we can play at. So when you add that onto, you know, a losing streak as well, yeah, it's time to have a meeting and hatch out whatever it is that you're feeling or whatever's going on in your mind, so we all have an understanding where each other is at, and seeing if we can, you know, kind of fix that problem together instead of everybody being in their own head and they all thinking, you know, it's them against the world and everybody's trying to fix it themselves, because you won't get far that way.
Do those sorts of meetings actually build a lot more trust as well?
I would say so. If it's a meeting where everybody speaks freely and vulnerably, yes, because you see a certain side of your teammates, or you get to understand a certain piece of their mind that you might not have got to see had you not had a meeting like that.
So is that where you feel comfortable in those environments? So you said you're not the extrovert normally, but is that somewhere where you're comfortable enough to lead the way as the big name in the room and be vulnerable?
No, that's when my reserve personality really comes out. I'm more just kind of internalizing and listening to what everybody's saying. I said a couple things, but I'm definitely not the loudest voice in the room when it comes to meetings like that, because, like I said, unless I'm on the basketball court, I am a very reserved personality and even more reserved in what I say, especially when you talk about emotions and feelings and all that.
It's something which you've had to develop, isn't it? Like, from a leadership perspective, given that you are now an official leader within the group, it's not something that you ever really sought out to be, was it?
No, but I mean, being around the block, you know, me and Jesse, the most tenured people on the Wildcats at this point, my voice has to be heard a little bit more than what I'm used to speaking, because obviously I think my voice holds weight at this point. And it's definitely been a conscious effort, but trying to get out of my comfort zone and It's easier to do it in games, you know, practice. It's still a little bit of a struggle, but in the games, it's easier for me to speak my mind right away to who, just because, again, that competitive nature of the will to win is at an all-time high at that point.
Nice to see Corey Webster back training after his ankle injury. It looked like he was moving really well today.
It's definitely great. And, you know, especially with the way our team is building, to have him back, that's such exciting news. And I know he's super happy to be back. So, and we'll have him out there on that floor. And, you know, he's probably going to bounce back like he never left, honestly.
You had some really good interactions last week in a Make-A-Wish Foundation wish for a young child called Lucas. Tell us about those sorts of interactions and how important it is for you to make someone's day and probably make someone's year in the situations you had last week.
I think it's very important. I guess more so it's sentimental for me, just because anytime I get the chance to be around a kid, I guess who's had medical issues, and me being a person they want to see, that tugs at my heart a little bit, just because I remember when I was, you know, a pretty sick child, and that's not fun at all. Like I understand, I guess somewhat the lows that can come with that mentally, even though we probably had much different conditions. But the fact that he wants, like, I'm one of his wishes, that's very humbling. So it's stuff that I don't take very lightly. And I guess that's another one of those times where I try to not be so reserved, because, you know, I don't want a kid wishing to hang out with me and then I don't say two words and he thinks I'm a bore. So I try to make sure I look cool in their eyes when I can.
So you're referring to when you the epilepsy problems you had as a young kid when your life appeared in danger for a while.
Yeah, yeah, and just being in and out of the hospital, constantly. I don't know, whenever I'm around a child, and like especially with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, it takes me back to stuff like that. And I always have a soft spot for any child that has medical issues, regardless of what it is.
It's nice to see your family at the game the other day as well. Your daughter's 4 now. Imagine it's starting to reach the stage where it's actually manageable for her to come and watch you play a little bit more and get some memories of you out on court as opposed to when she was a lot younger and needing to sleep.
Yeah, she's not as scared anymore of the loud noises and as she calls it, the red men, people that got them red costumes and no faces. She's not afraid of that anymore. So now she's able to come to a couple more games, which is pretty cool. And a couple of times she's wanted me to give her a hug after the game. So we've been doing that lately. Who knows, that might be a little ritual if we keep going how we're going.
Some nice photos as well, which I'm sure you'll treasure into the future and beyond your career, when you can, you know, you'll almost be able to track her life if she's at a lot of games, all the photos of you two out in RSC Arena at the end of games.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's like I said, it's stuff that I don't take for granted at all. I think it's so cool that, yeah, I get to be around some family, and my daughter being old enough now at this point to where probably when she's a teenager, maybe she might remember one or two of these games, at least at this young age. So that's really, really cool.
So she certainly won't be there this Friday. You're away this week against Illawarra Hawks, 4:30 p.m. tip-off Western Standard Time. What's it going to take to continue this role?
I mean, well, Illawarra is coming off a tough loss, I think a one-point loss to Brisbane. So they're going to be very gritty back at home, trying to get back on the winning side. And for us, knowing we're going to have to create our energy, we're going into, I guess, so to speak, enemy's territory. So we got to bring that energy, and we have to just continue to keep building and just make sure we have that mindset. We still got so much to prove to ourselves.
Oh, well, good luck. Thank you very much for joining us. Glad you got to the 50 Cent concert and things went well there as well. And it's been a good week. So thank you very much for coming on the Dribble podcast, and good luck this weekend.
No problem. Thanks.
Well, Perth Lynx had a huge win on Sunday when they beat the previously undefeated Melbourne Boomers in Victoria by 17 points. The Lynx opened up a big lead, then the Boomers drew level, but Perth steadied and stormed clear again on the back of some Annalie Maley magic. It was a crucial trip for the team after losses to Southside and Townsville, but there was another really significant achievement during that game, and it all centred around my next guest.
Tipper Tony getting across and just swatting it away.
Tipitoni coming downhill. Spin move, shot up, found, and one to come at the line.
Chabatoni on the weak side. Rainmaker three is nothing but net.
Alex Chabatoni, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, we can hear a little bit of noise in the background, and that would be your child who is yet to turn one. That's Elijah. You spent nearly 20 minutes on the court on the weekend, and the most significant part of that game for you was it was your first away one since you've come back from having a child, and that means that you had to take Elijah on the trip and handle basketball and baby. How was it?
Honestly, it actually went better than I thought it would be, but it's definitely different, you know. Packing a suitcase that's full of baby toys instead of clothes is definitely a new experience, but luckily the team embrace him and are all ready to help out.
So talk me through the plane, firstly. So you get on the plane and everyone else is probably just doing nothing. And are you getting assistance from people on the plane, or are you just being mum and not worrying about basketball at that point? How do you manage the trip?
Yeah, I just try and focus on being mum. Can't really think about the game yet. As I said, the girls are actually really good. So like, if I have to grab anything or carry bags, extra bags, they're always there straight away and too happy to grab little Eli, which is nice. Gives me a bit of a break for a few minutes. But yeah, it's pretty much just mum mode until really shoot around or game time.
So the league has implemented a policy several years ago around pregnancy and birth afterwards and helping their athletes. So Elijah was born in January this year. So he's not even 11 months yet. He's 10 and a half months. So yeah. Take us through that policy and what's in place to help make sure that you can actually play.
So, fortunately, I know they did a lot of work to make it happen and throughout the years, but the most helpful thing for me is, well, two things. One, being able to bring him to training so that there's babysitters there that can help me out. And they fly my mum on the road with me. So she'll meet us wherever we are and look after him, like, while I play or any game day commitments. And, I mean, she's too happy to have him. So luckily for me, she'll grab him most of the time that we're actually so in Melbourne or wherever we are.
So we just talked about how the fact that you had to do everything on the flight pretty much by yourself. That's because your mum is in South Australia. So you're in Perth, she's in South Australia, game was in Melbourne. So she'll fly wherever you go from Adelaide then.
Yep. So they just book her, she's meant to land before us most trips. But yeah, so she just, wherever we go, she just comes and meets us at the airport.
And it must be awesome just even to be able to see your mum a bit more, because she wouldn't get to see the little fella growing up. So I'd imagine she'd be loving this opportunity.
She is. She's so excited. I want to say it's to see me, but it really isn't. I try and still act like I'm the favourite, but I've been replaced. I think now she gets to see him every few weeks, so she's so happy. And just seeing how much he's changing every time she sees him.
It can't be easy still, though, doing the travel, playing, training sort of thing. I arrived at Bendat Basketball Centre last week for a Wildcats press conference, and your general manager, Sam McPherson, was walking Elijah around in the pram out in the car park trying to get him to fall asleep. So that's an example of what's going on whilst you're trying to train at that point. Is it more challenging than you could have imagined?
It is. I'm definitely enjoying it, but it is definitely harder than I thought, you know. It's like the little things of, instead of it taking me, you know, 5 minutes to get ready for training, it's like a 45-minute exercise trying to get him ready, all his stuff, and then by the time I get out, I've probably, forgotten my shoes. And then trying, you know, a lack of sleep. Anyone that has a kid, I'm sure they've all experienced it, the lack of sleep or, you know, you're like, oh, I just need you to be good for this 5 minutes. And with the 5 minutes, he screams his head off. And so it's just like little things like that where I didn't really anticipate that have made, it's a bit more challenging. But luckily, Ryan has his own little daughter. So he was, you know, he was probably more prepared for what I would be like than I was. So he's been really flexible with me and, understanding, which has been great.
I find your athletic achievements quite remarkable. Like, less than 12 months after giving birth, you're playing at the elite level. Like, how on earth have you been able to get yourself back into the shape that's required to play at that level after so much time off? Because it was more than a year that you're out of the game from when you fell pregnant as well. So what have you done to make sure that you can get back and compete with people who are playing all year round and haven't had to go through giving birth as well?
Yeah, it's the longest break I've ever had. So it was definitely a bit of eye opening. I guess I know it sounds weird, but I just took my time coming back and just made sure like my body felt right, so that as I continued to ramp up what I was doing, I was trying like not to get injured, not to, you know, be too sore. So like in the off season, I just did like a lot of jogging and then slowly got back into like a bit more running and shooting. Lucky Eli loves a jog with the pram, so there was a while there that we went jogging together. And then luckily, I guess the Lynx have, you know, pretty good weights program and the partnership with Waste. So Wolski's been really flexible and understanding, and is like, look, if you need, and like, you know, you're a bit sore here, or we'll modify your weight sessions and things like that, just to make sure that I can, that I'm ready to go, but, you know, still doing what I need to do to try and be at the level.
You've changed a little bit as a player since you shoot less in this team. I imagine that's more probably the role in the team rather than yourself. Would that be the case, that you're more of a distributor, you're more of a leader on court rather than a scoring sort of player at the moment?
Yeah. At the moment it's definitely, you know, I find like it's easier for me to get back into the game trying to play defense and move the ball than it is for me to shoot my way into it. And we have such talented scorers on the team, and you know, I guess coming with age is kind of knowing your role, and I'm like more than happy to facilitate the ball when you look at who it is shooting at the other end. Like they, you know, they've obviously haven't had the break, haven't had the time off, and in great form. So I'm like, well, we want them getting as many shots as possible.
I look at the issue of pregnancy in for female athletes in sport is so important. I look at your situation as really interesting, that you played your last game April 9, 2022. You had a baby January 2023. So my daughter was born 2 days before your son was born, although many years, but before then. So mid April you would have been falling pregnant, which means you would have been out of contract at that point. Is there an issue around looking after players who are midway through negotiations for a contract? Because once you fall pregnant, I'd imagine it's very different out of contract to if you're in contract and guaranteed that contract you paid out. Suddenly you're unemployed and looking for, and unable to really negotiate a deal. Would that be, is that an issue that you think needs to be looked at?
I definitely think it needs to be looked at, but I can understand it both ways. I know personally, I felt like so guilty that I was like, oh, there's no way that I want to get pregnant in contract, because I know that a lot of the clubs are struggling, and, you know, it's not that they're not making that much money. But then from a selfish point of view, it's like, okay, well, I've done this for the last 10 years, so now what do I do? Which is where I think there needs to be something done, whether it's on the clubs or the league, I'm not sure. But the way it is now is definitely not sustainable. You know, it's pretty much like, oh, you get pregnant, too bad, like you're on your own, go find a job if someone will hire you, which is not the most ideal situation to be in. I was fortunate that I kind of had a job lined up with Basketball WA, and they were really, really supportive of me, and they knew I was pregnant pretty early, and they didn't have an issue, which definitely made everything easier. And my partner also he's working in Perth at the moment, but he has the ability to go fly in, fly out. So financially we knew we'll be okay. But I know that's not the situation for a lot of people, especially athletes.
Yeah, and you got the relationship with your coach and your teammates and your managers and all those sorts of people within a team who you don't want to lie to and say, no, I'll sign up for next year, and then say, oh, by the way, sorry, you need to go and find another guard because I'm going to be actually unavailable even though I've signed that deal.
Exactly. And, you know, that's another spot they then need to fill, and it makes it all hard. You know, if the longer you wait, the harder it is for them to find someone else. So that all those factors definitely did come into it.
He's a chatty little kid, isn't he?
He is. I'm not sure. Just having little conversations. He's learning how to say
letters on, you different sounds.
you're 29, so you're in that really weird age from an athletic point of view and a baby point of view as well, like about how many kids you want to have and how long you want your career to go for and when's a good time to have another child, when's a bad time to not play basketball. Like, have you got a plan around how big the family wants to be?
I actually really enjoyed being pregnant, so I don't mind at all how many there are. It's definitely a weird time because I'm like, I don't think coming back with like multiple children would definitely not be the same. So my plan is to wait a bit longer, play a few more years at least, and then reevaluate and see. But I'm not sure it's ever, you know, I guess for having a baby, it's never really a great time. There's always something that you want to do. So it's just weighing up whether you can deal without it or whether you don't think you're ready. So I guess I'll just have to wait and see.
You've got a big opportunity this week to take Elijah back home to see the whole family. Your mum won't have to get on a plane because you're going to South Australia for this weekend. That must be exciting to be able to take him and the whole family will be up and about wanting to see him as much as possible.
Oh, yes, I'm so excited. I had this road trip marked down on the calendar from when I signed pretty much. They're all so excited and can't wait to see him. I can't wait because I pretty much could drop him home and do whatever I want for the day. And I know he'll be fine. And they're all like so in love with him, which is great. And he's pretty good with other people. So we can't wait to go home. Can we, Eli?
So he's great with other people, but true or false, he was the source of the illness which swept through the team a couple of weeks back, which pretty much ruined your entire week of practice.
Ah, true. I blame daycare. I swear every week he comes home with something new. But yes, he was the source of the gastro bug that wiped out. I think it wiped out like 36 people in the end. It went through the staff upstairs and our whole team.
It wasn't ideal. Sam McPherson, your general manager, almost vomited pre-game at one point and left the building. One of the refs copped it as well. A couple of staff members who were putting down everything down on the court before the game, all the advertising things, they got crook as well. It was a cracker of an illness that he managed to give out. So it's interesting. The fixtures fall in your way. They're like, his birthday is Jan 21, which is a Sunday. You play on the Saturday night before and then in Melbourne on the 24th, so you'll travel 23rd. It gives you those 2 days, 21st, 22nd, to actually have his first birthday. Did someone know that this fixture needed to be organised perfectly for you?
No, but I was definitely happy when I saw it because I think that was one of the first things that actually my partner looked at. He was like, oh, look, we could do something on the Sunday. I was like, oh, perfect. And I know like my family would be like looking like, do we fly over? Do we meet you in Melbourne and do something then? So we're just trying to work out what exactly we're doing, but it's definitely exciting. But crazy to think that he'll be one soon.
It is. It's amazing how fast time goes by. Now, you coached the Southwest Slammers last season. You're not doing that next season. Tell me, did coaching make you a better player?
I think it did. Even just having like a new appreciation for how much, you know, goes into like the scout and the game plan and everything like that, I think it just made me want to pay more attention. And then it just makes you look at the game differently. You know, it's like what is the best situation in here? You know, the outcome, they might still score, which as a player, you know, frustrates you. But then when you're on the other end, you're like, oh, actually, like, you know, this worked well. Their percentage came down and all that side of like the analytical side that I never really worried about when I was playing. That kind of has been like the biggest difference, you know.
So what will you do this offseason? Are you planning on playing for again? Are you going to be working? Are you going to be mumming? What's your plan to? Because it felt like last season helped you to get back in this year. Were you going to need that break in the offseason this time? As I said, you're not coaching again. What have you got a plan at this point?
At the moment, my intention is to play, but I'm just not 100% sure where or how it will look because obviously so I'm working, but then obviously being a mum is my priority, and I do want to get to Adelaide a little bit more than I have, so I'm just waiting. Probably I'm going to wait until early next year and then kind of make a decision as to what it looks like, whether it's, you know, just playing when I can or like fully committing to a team. So, yeah.
Wait, and see, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there saying, I wonder how we can get her onto our roster for the offseason. So,
there they go. They have the answer.
So, massive effort by the Lynx last week. What did that win do for the group, given that you were challenged in the exact same way you were challenged by Townsville on the south side, and this time you came through and had the win?
Honestly, I think it just brought us together and showed how good we could be. The previous games, you know, when things started going bad, we kind of went really individual and fell apart a little bit. You know, the focus became trying to get quick shots, or, you know, our defense was the first thing to kind of, fall apart. Whereas this week, you know, I think we just showed that when we set our minds to things, we can do it. Like, I know as a team, our focus in, you know, coming out of the third was, how good can our defense be? Can we get three stops here? Can we keep the momentum going? And when things weren't going our way in offense, we didn't fall apart. We stayed together. We kept playing as a team. And I just think that was so huge for us and just gives us a lot of confidence and belief moving forward.
So what do you expect to happen in the rematch on Thursday? They'll obviously come out with some different plans. How different do you expect them to be?
Well, I've playing for Chris before, I know that he definitely, you know, would not be happy with that. And he'll probably like reassess, go through their offenses, what worked for them, and really focus on getting that in place this week. And I think that the biggest thing is, you know, we're obviously going to make adjustments where we can, but it's just going to come down to, like, you know, who can execute better, you know, who can stay with the game plan. I know that they'll go away and be working on their game and try and work out what areas they can really capitalize in.
And then, as we said, you head to Adelaide. There's a fair chance that Steph Gorman will return from what's been a pretty long-term injury for her, a frustrating time in the past few weeks.
Yes, well, we definitely all miss Steph. Having her in court is a huge asset for us. You know, her ability to score and defend is unreal, but she's also just a great teammate, you know. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that she'll be back. She'll be back Sunday for that game. I know that they've just got a few more little fitness tests and things just to make sure she's 100% good to go. But, yeah, I know we're all hoping she'll be back and just fit back in where she was before.
So it is Perth Lynx versus Melbourne Boomers, 6:30 p.m. on Thursday night at the Bendat Basketball Centre, followed by the Lynx in an away game against Adelaide Lightning. That's at 12:30 p.m. Western Standard Time on Sunday. Good luck with both of those. Thank you for joining us. Thanks, Eli in the background for joining us as well. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was great to speak to you.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. Remember, you can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian newspaper and at thewest.com.au. Thanks to Eli in the background. Thanks to Bryce Cotton and Alex Cibitone for their time. Thanks to Josh Cable for all of his production work. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Dribble Podcast.